Welcome back to The Crack, everybody. It's Friday, and that only means one thing. It is this beautiful show on the Ariel Helwani Show YouTube channel. It's me, Pete Carroll, and we're going to talk about MMA today. We're just a week away from Tom Aspinall v. Ciryl Gane. There is news swirling all around the place about Mr. Alex Pereira, who has just returned to his mantle as the light heavyweight champion of the world. We've got a UFC Vancouver card coming up. Ronda Rousey appeared on The Breakfast Show, and she seems more keen about this MMA return than we may have bargained for last week. Oh yeah, guess who is fighting in a trilogy fight? It is Chris Weidman v. Anderson Silva. They're boxing, apparently. And I can tell you one thing, the two guys who do this show with me must be absolutely buzzing about it. You know them, you love them. Let's say hello to Mr. Chuck Mendenhall. Chuck Mendenhall, how are you getting on, sir? How are you? Look at that beautiful hat on your head. How are you?
Yeah, you like that? I can barely hear you guys through all the buzzing going on for that Weidman fight, man. That's going to be huge.
I've left a chunk of 50 minutes in the middle of the show because I know there's a lot of things
to
break down the intricacies.
A lot of meat on that bone, as Ben likes to say.
Well, speaking of Ben, we should bring this man in because last week we may have said he was in a waiting room. Guess what, guys? He was not in a waiting room. We can now reveal.
Yes.
Here he is. Look at this. Listen to this beautiful music. Wait, Jordan. Congratulations, Ben and Brooklyn, on your wedding day last Friday. This man will do anything to avoid work. He said, no way. I'm going to get married. Look at this. Look at this outfit. Absolutely stunning. And I believe we have the picture of him and the beautiful bride, Brooklyn, on the way down the steps. This is a beautiful, beautiful couple. Ben,
I told him, by the way, I said, Ben, on our thread on Slack, I was like, it's weird seeing you this happy, Ben, because this is not usual, you know?
You know, that is a sentiment that has been expressed to me from a few different people who know me pretty well. And I'll tell you what, that'll make you take stock of your life a little bit and make you think about what's been going on with you over the years. Because that's just like, once I hear it, I got to admit, I don't disagree with what you're saying. But yeah, it does make you go, huh, that's, you know, if one person said it, you'd be like, okay, fine. That's one man talking, but several people have said it. So there must be something to it.
Man, it looked like an incredible day, dude. Fantastic time had. I see the great Chad Dundas was there for the co-main event. A wonderful time had. Can we just talk, give an insight into Ben, how we heard he was in fact getting married. Just, you know, midweek, he goes, hey, Petey, just want to let you know, can't do the show Friday, getting married. Ben, unbelievable laid-back dude. I wish I had this way about me. How did you manage to seemingly put this together so quickly without anyone knowing and have it look so goddamn cool?
I'll tell you what, see, this is the only reason I sent you that text was because when I looked at it, I was like, the ceremony is at noon. We record at 11 my time. It's something it usually goes 12:15 or so. And I was like, okay, it looks like I'm not going to be able to. If the ceremony had been an hour later or if this show had started an hour earlier, I would have done it. I'd have been here because that's just the kind of guy I am.
I actually don't doubt that. I don't doubt that. I think you would.
Everyone in the background running around. Come on, we got to go. And he's like, hang on. Just want to weigh in on this last. Who am I picking for this main event this weekend? Unbelievable, man. Well, congratulations. You both look absolutely fantastic. And we wish you many, many happy years together, as I'm sure you will have. But let's burst that bubble immediately and speak about MMA, the thing that we've dedicated our lives for collectively about 50 years among us, I'd assume. Both of you have wrote about the first topic I want to bring to our attention today, because as I said at the top of the show, Tom Aspinall v. Ciryl Gane is next week, and based on what I've been hearing from my American friends, not a huge amount of buzz for this one across the Atlantic, but alas, it is happening. And another thing that's happening is constant conversations about Alex Pereira and his apparently very, very soon to happen move to heavyweight. John Jones, the White House, all this is happening. Chuck Mendenhall, we'll start with you. Here it is there. There's his article that's on Uncrowned Mode. It's simple. Alex Pereira's next fight should be against John Jones. He goes through all the possibilities. He talks about Khamzat Chimaev wanting a piece. Obviously, Ankalaev being right there, a trilogy fight with him. But it is John Jones and this entry to heavyweight that has tickled your fancy, Chuck Mendenhall.
Yes.
Tell me why.
And doesn't it seem like the Ankalaev fight is like the trilogy, which should be kind of like, well, they got to resolve this thing, right? It's 1-1, and that is like maybe 12th on the list of fights for Alex Pereira at this point. I just was looking at it, and you're like, if you're not going to give, like, if he's going to make a leap to heavyweight, right? If he's going to make that leap, and he's looking, because I think he fractured his foot. I don't know if that's been 100% confirmed. I know that's what he thought he had done in his fight. And he's going to be out, and it's going to be, you know, until next summer, possibly the White House card. What else are you going to do with him at this point? I know that, like, with Tom Aspinall, we want to kind of put, and I know we're going to talk about that a little later on, you kind of want to, like, have something on his horizon should he get by Ciryl Gane. You want something big there. But I think if you're getting a one-off, right, from John Jones, and you're not sure you can trust him beyond that, which is where the where Dana White and the UFC has been with this, especially after Dana went on that whole, and I point this out all the time, like this whole media tour where he's arguing about his GOAT status, his pound-for-pound status, only to have John basically say, like, nah, man, take the belt, and 2 weeks later be like, nah, I'm coming back, and just to kind of, you know, go back and forth and really kind of humiliate Dana in a weird way, man. And if you can't trust him to be in a title shot, right? If you can't throw him against Aspinall in a fight like that, not knowing what the future would hold beyond that, I just think you got to make this fight. By the time you get to June, which I think is when they want to do that White House card, Pereira will be, I think, 1 month away from turning 39. If you're not going to do it now, you're probably not going to do it.
Well, and Ben, would you agree with that? Is this the natural thing to do? I saw your mailbag piece where you've argued, and correct me if I'm wrong, that really, the heavyweight division needs Alex Pereira at this point. We need some verification for a champion like Aspinall. We have known about your fears that that awaits beyond a potential Ciryl Gane win next weekend in Abu Dhabi. Does the heavyweight division need Poatan, need this superstar?
I don't know if it absolutely needs Alex Pereira, but it needs Tom Aspinall. And it is going to need something for him to do. Because it needs him to beat Ciryl Gane. Well, the question that kind of set us off was somebody wrote in and they were like, am I crazy for thinking that a Ciryl Gane win next weekend would be a lot more interesting, would open up more interesting doors for what we could do in the heavyweight division? And I was just like, no, it would be a disaster and a crisis of legitimacy. You know, if he wins the fight, he wins the fight. Good for him. That's the thing that separates us from pro wrestling, is that the stuff we want to happen or we think makes sense to happen doesn't always happen. But I think, if you picture the situation right now at heavyweight, is that, you know, you had a champion in Francis Ngannou who was the little lineal MMA heavyweight champion, and then he walks away from the UFC with the belt. So we got to grab a new belt out of the supply closet. We have John Jones and Ciryl Gane fight over it. John Jones beats him easily, just cuts right through Ciryl Gane like a hot knife through butter. And then you turn around, John Jones, instead of doing the fight that would make the most sense against Tom Aspinall, handpicks his opponent in Stipe Miocic, an aged version of Stipe Miocic, all very calculated on John Jones's part. He wanted to get that name on the resume, stick that pelt on the wall, and then leave. And that leaves us in like a bad spot for the heavyweight division. Tom Aspinall gets promoted to heavyweight champion, and it's kind of just good luck for the UFC that they had him sitting around as interim champ, already a believable guy as heavyweight champion. You look at Tom Aspinall and you go, yeah, that seems like that might be the baddest big man on the planet. And you have him to carry you forward and to kind of bridge that gap of legitimacy that you lost when you lost Francis Ngannou. But if he goes out there and if he loses to Ciryl Gane, people are going to be looking and saying, well, Gane is 0-2 in title fights. Lost to both Francis Ngannou and John Jones, the two guys who we would have otherwise called heavyweight champion if they hadn't just pieced up out of the UFC in their own various ways. And so if you have Ciryl Gane now with the strap around his waist, I don't know if anybody's looking at him and going, yeah, that's the best heavyweight on the planet. Because we've seen that he is not the best heavyweight on the planet. He's very good. But there's nothing that we've seen. If he beats Tom Aspinall especially, people will just go, all right, Tom Aspinall was never as good as we thought. And I understand the logic that people are going, hey, if Alex Pereira were to go up to heavyweight, Pereira versus Gane is a fun fight stylistically and probably a more winnable fight for Pereira at heavyweight. But that's not necessarily how I think we ought to be viewing it. Because especially, you know, I saw Chuck making the case, and I understand the case a lot of people are making for Pereira versus John Jones. I kind of think John Jones just beats him kind of easily, just on the wrestling. I kind of think stylistically, it's a terrible matchup for Pereira. I understand why people are excited about it. But for me, if you had Pereira versus Tom Aspinall, that is assuming Aspinall successfully defends the title, then you have a legit champ versus champ fight. You have Pereira trying to do something that's never been done before and becoming a three-division UFC champion. That, to me, you can sell that one to me a whole lot more than you can sell Pereira versus John Jones, who, win or lose, is probably just going to leave again as soon as it's over. Like, that one just seems like a dead end to me, and it's just not nearly as interesting as the stakes in Pereira versus Aspinall.
Ben, can you imagine the 1970s, somebody writing into your mailbag and saying, like, I think Ron Lyles should beat, you know, Muhammad Ali or whatever it is. Like, this would be like saying, like, let's get one of the guys, the lesser players of that golden era of boxing. Let's put them with the belt while these other, like, the big names, because we have all of these, John Jones, right? Like, you've got Aspinall and you've got Ngannou out there, but yet we want this guy to be holding the belt. That would seem a little bit like we're at the masquerade, right? Like, it's not, that would not seem real to me. So I don't understand that logic. I get it from a lens of Alex Pereira coming up, sure, because then you're like, well, everybody kind of looks at Ciryl Gane as like, well, I could probably beat that guy, you know? And that's just an unfortunate, you know, place he's in, like you mentioned, 0-2. And it's crazy to me, like, Ciryl Gane kind of he's almost like the stand-in for everything that Aspinall wanted, right? Like, because he's already got his shot at Jones. He's already got his shot at Ngannou, and Aspinall can't get any of these guys. And I think that that's one of those weird things where now you're just kind of throwing the remainder of the math into the situation. If he beats Gane, you kind of want to see him against one of those guys, right? Like, that's where it has to head. If it's not heading in this direction, we're not looking at the best of the best here.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead, Ben.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. And I also think that the thing that you have in Tom Aspinall that you wanted to capitalize on is we're excited about him, but we also feel like in some ways he's still an unknown quantity. Because could Tom Aspinall turn out to just be absolutely unbeatable for years to come at heavyweight, a division where nobody has stayed unbeatable for very long? Like, yeah, at this point, maybe. You know, or could Tom Aspinall turn out to have deficiencies in his game that we haven't seen exposed just because nobody's been able to hang around with him for all that long in too many of these fights? That also seems like a possibility.
I'm sorry, one last thing, but consider this. Like, say that, you know, Aspinall wins the title, right? Like, he's got the title. When you look at the rankings, the way they exist right now, he's already beaten, Gane is one, right? So now he will have beaten 1 through 4. He will have beaten 1 through 4 already. Like, people have said he hasn't fought anybody, but you're like, he's fought all the dudes that are basically in the top of that space right now. Volkov, who has a fight coming up. The only guy he hasn't would be number 5, I think, or 4. I think he's number 5, Jelton Almeida. That would be the only guy. There we go. There's the graphic. Like, that's the only guy on that list that he hasn't fought. So you can see it's unusual for a guy to finally realize a title and already have kind of cleaned out the cupboards in a lot of ways. So it's like, this is a very unique setup. If he does get it, and that's why it really is imperative. I think you're 100% right. You need him to be there as kind of a dangling carrot for one of these other guys, but he's imperative. If you start to get into the Ciryl Gane era, we're almost like a woodwork kind of division at that point.
You made a point about Pereira and you know, the fact that he wants to fight Jones, and Ben's kind of talking about, I'd love to see him fight Tom Aspinall. I agree with you on that, Ben. I couldn't help but notice that Poatan was very specific after this fight. It was not, I'm going to heavyweight, guys. It was, I'm fighting John Jones. You obviously very respectful given that John's brother had recently passed away. But Chuck, as a guy, you know, who's in the same neck of the woods, you know, he's going to the same bowling alley, you know, all this kind of stuff.
Built different out here in Connecticut, you know.
Do you think Pereira could have his arm twisted into a Tom Aspinall fight, or is it the legacy fight with Jones that he's after? Because I can't help but feel that there is this importance, there is this need for verification for some reason to come from another weight class given the state of heavyweight. But it is also striking me that Tom Aspinall is the champion of the division, but he seems to be the odd man out as well, which is a crazy situation to be.
Nobody wants to fight him, Pizzi. It's just, I think that, like, given how, so Ankalaev was supposed to be the first big test for Pereira in the sense of the wrestling, right? Like, well, he's a big guy. He's going to wrestle. We didn't really see it, but although he did kind of dominate the first fight in kind of outpointing Pereira, but this one he goes right at him. And so if you're going to, like, because everything plays out in prospect in the fight game, everything's built on the hype, you have the best B-roll, right, to kind of be like, this guy is going to go right at John Jones. Now, if you really think about it, John Jones has always broke down his opponents really well. That's why he doesn't like to take short notice fights like with Chael Sonnen back in the day and things like that. He wants to break down.
Killed the sport. Killed the sport back then. Remember that?
Yeah, he attempted to kill the sport.
R.I.P.
Just like the way he's going to look at it is he's going to see the vulnerabilities, right? And I think the biggest vulnerability that you can point out that we still suspect is the case is going to be that wrestling. And I can't get past that. Besides, John Jones is huge now. You know, he walks around very big. I know that, and seeing Alex in kind of more in the off time, like he's a big guy. He's big, 6'3", but he's filled out. It's not like he's a smaller, like he's, but he would be small for heavyweight. He would be small for John Jones. And it's tough for me to see a scenario where he's keeping it standing and keeping it in his danger zone for too long in that fight. In prospect, though, man, like in the buildup to that fight, I think it would be so much fun because we don't get fights like that.
Wouldn't it also, though, can you imagine being Tom Aspinall and if you defend the title against Ciryl Gane and then the UFC is investing in a big buildup of Alex Pereira moving up to heavyweight to fight the guy who wouldn't fight you? And you're just standing around here being like, how many damn rubber duckies do I need to hold up on camera?
Not to mention
before
the White House
I shame card. One of you guys into coming over here and fighting me, damn it. Because especially,
right.
I agree with you that like John Jones is a smart fighter, has such a smart fight IQ that he is going to see those openings in Alex Pereira's game. The only hopes you would have that he would choose not to exploit them would be ego. That he wants to go out there and prove, like, I don't have to take him down. I, you know, the other hope you have
an ego. I don't think he's really egoless. Yeah,
fair point.
The other hope you have is that even while he was totally dominant in that Stipe fight, you just watched John Jones moving around the cage a little bit, and it was a stark reminder. Oh yeah, time is gonna do its work on John Jones as well. He is not any more ageless than the rest of us, even if he is kind of a once-in-a-generation athlete for MMA. He is a slower and slightly diminished version of himself, and that's only going to get worse the longer he stays out of the cage. Plus, we know that when he is out of the cage, he doesn't exactly take the best care of his body at all times. And so those are the hopes you have if you're Alex Pereira. He's going to come in under-trained, maybe not terribly motivated, and he will have left his best stuff on the nightclub dance floor. And those are all real possibilities.
Ben, do you think we'll feel any better about this situation next week, right? Like, say everything goes according to plan to some extent. Tom Aspinall is the champion of, he's beaten Ciryl Gane. He has retained his heavyweight championship. Will everything get cleaned up? Will we all suddenly be like, you know, everything makes sense. We suddenly have our North Star back. He has shown the world that he can beat Ciryl Gane. Is everything going to make sense next Sunday morning?
You know, I think that it gets closest to making sense if Tom Aspinall goes out there, especially if he like knocks out Ciryl Gane, you know, does one of those Tom Aspinall specials. Then I do think we're going to pretty quickly find ourselves in a crisis of who do we have him fight? Because as you said, you know, it is uncommon, especially at heavyweight, to see a guy get to the top and have beat so many of the top contenders already getting there. You see it more often in a division like lightweight or something where you really got to run the table in order to even get a title shot in most cases. You got to win 7 or 8 in a row before we remember your name in those divisions. Heavyweight, anybody who can string 3 wins together is a title contender at heavyweight. And yet you look around at who else in the division you have for him that would really get people excited right now. There's not a ton there. And I do think, if you're trying to put together a White House card and you want a heavyweight title headliner to really say, you know, that's the kind of thing that the masses understand. And that's who you should be trying to market toward for a card like that, that is going to reach outside the MMA bubble. People understand heavyweight championship of the world. If you say light heavyweight championship, you say welterweight championship, they kind of go, I don't know if that's like the real stuff or not.
Point.
Heavyweight championship, everybody knows what that is. And if you had a situation where you could do a British champion versus an American challenger or something, that would be great for the narrative. Would have been slightly better when we were trying to do it to celebrate like America's birthday and not Donald Trump's birthday, but still, you know, it would work as a narrative on the White House.
Is that the leverage, like, do you guys think? Like, so John Jones didn't want to fight Aspinall. Aspinall goes in, like you're mentioning, Pete, everything gets set to right where he's like, boom, he reminds everybody. Is that kind of like, okay, you want it on the White House card? We told you it was one in a billion chances. Dana White saying this, but now I'm going to give you that one chance, but it's going to be against us. You know, you got to fight the guy. Is that the leverage that they need? Because honestly, wouldn't it magnify the absurdity if he doesn't want to fight him on the, like, a White House card? Wouldn't that just magnify this whole thing? If you're trying to give him the benefit of the doubt that he's not ducking, which at this point feels nearly impossible, that would certainly solidify it forever, wouldn't it? That, like, he gets his wish, but he doesn't want to fight Aspinall at that point.
Yeah, I think it would. And I mean, I think that leverage wise to get John Jones to do it is because he has put himself in such a weird position as like a supplicant now. He had everything. He had the ball was in John Jones's court. He was the heavyweight champion. He was in a position to make huge financial demands. The UFC could even get a little outside help to come in with the money bags and make that fight happen. And he still said no. And then to turn around so quickly after that and be like, actually, I want back in, but for this one event. And the roles then totally flip where the UFC says, no, thanks. We can't trust you with this one. And he's in a position, instead of being like, you come to me and put the blank check on the table and I'll think about it. Now, instead, he's saying pretty please. And the UFC is saying, I don't know, man. So, like, he's screwed himself so much. This would be the one way to kind of help himself out if he was like, yeah, sure, let's do the Tom Aspinall title fight and, you know, let's go.
Having said all this, congratulations, Ciryl Gane, on your big victory next Saturday night. Right, Pete?
I mean, it's right there, guys. It's a huge fight. The king of Europe will be decided, not just the heavyweight division, but the king of storied rivals, England and France. I'm already just getting my feet.
John Jones
ideas.
May take that fight for free if he can at that point.
But, you know, like, just before we move on, like, it's the most right Dana White seems to be about something in quite some while, having some reservations about John Jones with this massive card that's going to happen on the president's lawn or whatever, right? Like, you know, that is, like, you can't just expect to have Alex Pereira waiting in the wings in case this doesn't work. Like, that's holding up everything. That's just not one division being destroyed. It's two, right? Like, if you're also putting, remember the McGregor thing with the lightweight title? Like, that's what it would feel like if we start doing that with Pereira.
And I think Jones and Pereira are the same age, aren't they? They're both like 38. Yes. They turn 39 next summer. You know, they're both the same age, so they're in the same boat. You know, well, you've got just a little bit left out of each guy here.
The other thing is that if you can't, for one reason or another, make Pereira versus Jones, you do have other stuff. Like, as much as I think Pereira probably goes out there and wins another fight with Jiří Procházka, damn if I wouldn't watch it. Jiří Procházka just ends up being so much fun. He's just such a wild man, such a weirdsmobile that we are grateful to have in this sport. And
just saying it.
The thing is, even though I don't believe he beats Alex Pereira, I believe that he believes he will figure out a way this time to beat Alex Pereira. So, like, if none of these dream come true plans come to fruition, and just looking at how things have gone with the UFC making the absolute biggest fights, history suggests that we shouldn't get our hearts set on the number one choice. You do have other stuff you can do with Alex Pereira. A third fight with Jiří, we'll still watch that. That'll be a lot of fun, you know, even if it's been tilted in one direction so far. Tom Aspinall trying to find a fresh heavyweight contender. If you can't get John Jones back in there, that's probably a little tougher.
Poor Carlos Olberg can't even see the title with ordinary binoculars. He can't even. He should be like the number one guy, right? Like, this is, we're not even mentioning the guy.
He's just going to show up, weep as your biggest rival, you know, retains his title. And, you know, you become, no one's going to argue with you. You know what I mean?
Did you see him celebrating his birthday at the restaurant with his friends where they hand Jiří a cupcake with a lit candle in it? He holds it up. Everybody goes, yeah, Jiří, it's your birthday. He goes, you think he's going to blow out the candle?
No.
He's going to thank his friends. He's going to eat his cupcake.
I know.
And then he just stuffs the lit candle portion. Like, he makes a gesture to blow it out, but you can see as the candle disappears into his mouth, there's still some fire on this candle.
Oh my God.
And he eats just the candle. Just the candle. And that just feels like, it doesn't feel performative coming from him. It feels like, yeah, it's probably what it's like to hang out with Yuri. You know,
he's going to maintain the calorie deficit.
He's just, he's going to do some stuff like that. You know what? Yeah, I'll watch that guy in another title fight, even if he's already 0-2 against the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's undefeated aura, as I've said endlessly. Like, I mean, Ulberg, you're a beautiful man, no doubt about it, but aura-wise, that shot is perfect, where it shows Yuri, like, clenching his fist, weeping, and then it just pans to Ulberg, and he's like, you're like, yeah, that's why we're talking about you.
Oh, man.
We have more things to discuss. We're going to hit that ad break so we can pay Chuck and Ben. They're huge boatloads of money that they demand to be on this show. And then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about, yes, the one you've been waiting for, Weidman v. Anderson 3.
Yes, big guy upstairs.
Just clearing the caviar from my table here as we get back to mixed martial arts. And yes, everybody was saying, you know, I don't really know if I'm into this Jake Paul v. Tank Davis card, but bam! They shut you guys right up there yesterday when they announced, that's right, Anderson Silva v. Chris Weidman is going down. Sorry, the third time they will meet each other, this time in boxing, Friday, November 14th. I could just hear the collective roars of adulation just around the internet as this happened. I was like, oh my God, it's finally happening. It's finally happening. Boys, this is one of those ones that you see it and you're like, oh God, I can't believe. I can't believe we're here. They're in the Katie Taylor v. Amanda Serrano slot, and I think it might have the opposite impact, Chuck. What did you think when you saw this beautiful fight being made on a Jake Paul undercard?
I'm always a little confused when they, like, you know, when you mention Katie and Amanda being like that, that was sort of like, okay, we're going to balance the ledger out here.
Yes.
We're going to give you something of true value to go along with the spectacle that you're about to see. This one was like, I feel like they just go shopping at the MMA relic store, you know, or like the antique, and they just dust these guys off. But I'm like, you wouldn't want to watch these guys in like a watermelon eating contest or something. It's like MMA was its own thing. There were reasons that these guys were so compelling when they fought each other. This goes all the way back to like the Chael Sonnen in UFC, you know, 117, when he presented Anderson Silva at that time the greatest challenge of his life. Take, you know, basically winning four and a half rounds before he loses that fight. Chris Weidman was kind of like the younger, deadlier version coming for him. And that was what made it so fun. I was at both those fights. Obviously, we saw how all that plays out. But this is with all of those components in play, all that context. You go forward a bunch of years. You take away a bunch of the martial arts and you say, we're going to put you in bigger gloves. You know, at Anderson Silva now 50. And we've seen him in the boxing ring before. You get Chris Weidman now 41. And I knew exactly what the low-hanging fruit, you know, response to this was going to be. It was, hey, at least nobody's going to break a leg in this fight, you know, like, because now they're just
probably.
I mean, we can't guarantee anything, right? Like, but I love both dudes. I think there's a part of me, man, you guys tell me too. We cover these guys for the bulk of their careers, you know? We've seen them stand in and do all this stuff. We've seen Chris Weidman and both guys come back from ridiculous injuries, seeing them knocked out, all that stuff. There's a point when you're like, I don't want to see it, you know, I don't want to see it anymore. And I'm not saying that they're not entitled to the money and all that, but I'm not sure I get where there's a compelling, I must see this boxing event between these two guys. I don't know where that comes into play here.
Yeah, they're both legends. Like, that's the thing. Like, it almost to say that this is part of what that was, I find disrespectful. Do you know what I mean? Like, these guys are savages. I'll never forget reacting to that first fight, how unbelievable it was. As you said, Weidman on the way up, Anderson, this seemingly unbeatable guy, and for the way it played out. And then we're seeing it here. Like, this, Ben, what I'm thinking is, like, who actually does want this? Like, where was the, like, who was sitting in the MVP head office going, you know what we're going to do? I've got it. It's the one everyone's waiting for. It's Weidman Anderson. Like, who does want
I do see your argument about it being disrespectful, because it does kind of feel like the Beatles are reuniting to play a game of Monopoly. You know, like, and so you're like, it's not really the same thing, you guys. But I do think it's smart for what they're trying to do. The whole Jake Paul and MVP brand, and it's sort of found its way over the years by seeing what works, what do audiences respond to, what doesn't work. They excel at getting you to watch stuff against your will. putting together these kind of fights where you're like, I don't want to. I want to think of myself as the kind of person who doesn't go in for this crap. And then when it's Friday night, and it's on Netflix, you know, I really got to do anything. You probably have Netflix already, you know, like you want to watch that Charlie Sheen documentary. It's crazy, by the way. I do recommend that one. Yeah. You know, you're already watching stuff on Netflix. It's Friday night. It's on. You might not get us with Jake Paul versus Tank Davis just because it's ridiculous. Aside from the ridiculous visuals that you get at the press conference, the energy you get is that Tank Davis looks like he's doing community service out there. He couldn't look any less interested in being there. And so that one, it's not really on its own, maybe going to get you to sit through the fight card. But if they were to open the card up with Anderson Silva and Chris Weidman, and you'd be curious, right? Especially because you feel like similar to, remember when Tito Ortiz and Chuck Liddell had that fight at the Golden Boy event? And that one was sad. That one was really sad because you watched Chuck Liddell walk out for that one. You watched him stand in the corner and shadow box, and you went, "Oh no, no, he's got nothing left." But it's like it's the same kind of thing where you were like, Chuck was 2-0 against Tito when it mattered, but now just through the way each guy's skills have aged, was the one time Tito Ortiz could get a win back over Chuck Liddell. Again, disrespectful. A win he did not deserve to have over Chuck Liddell, but a win he nonetheless got. Yeah, and this is kind of the same thing in a way where you're going, all right, Chris Weidman won those fights when it mattered and ended the Anderson Silva title reign. Nothing's really going to change the way that chapter of MMA history shaped up. Now, though, Anderson Silva's got that boxing experience. He is, you know, still considerably older than Chris Weidman. Weidman's had some health woes, all that kind of stuff. Doesn't really know a whole lot about just the classic sweet science. Maybe Anderson Silva can get a win back now over this version of Chris Weidman in this sport. And it also feels like, I know we're joking about the broken leg thing, but there is a part of me that kind of looked at that matchup and went, I feel like probably nobody gets too badly hurt in this one.
Yeah.
I feel like we probably box each other to a 6-round decision. You know,
it's a horribly low bar you're putting.
It is. It is. But if your only goal is to get me to turn on Netflix on Friday night and just check it out and see how it's going, then maybe I stick around for the other fights after that. Like, I do think it kind of succeeds in doing that, and it succeeds in a almost nefarious way. It feels like a use of the dark arts. And yet, that's what they've been really good at. And I think that's what they're kind of going to be missing with the Jake Paul Tank Davis thing, because I'm going to be like, it's the kind of ridiculous I feel like I could skip instead of the kind of ridiculous that I almost hate watch, you know?
You're not a little bit intrigued by Tank Davis giving up all that size, going in there, just watching him try to outbox this guy? Come on. That's going to be fun, isn't it?
It just seems like he doesn't give a shit about the entire thing.
Dude, I watched the guy take a knee in his last. So I was in the arena when he just decided to take a knee. And I'm like, yeah, this guy doesn't give a shit even against
world title fights.
Yeah, when he's losing, like Lamont Roche. I mean, I agree with you 100%, but that actually kind of, in a strange way, feeds into it too. Like his indifference towards this is such a bizarre thing to go into this fight with.
It's just kind of just Ben saying this, tuning into a boxing match and being like, hope no one gets hurt.
Yeah. But we can all admit if Anderson does win, right? Like, it's all even Stevens, right? Like, we're pretty...
Quadrilogy. Let's go again. I mean, how are we going to find out who is the better guy? Well,
then we got to put on the singlets and have a wrestling match.
Yeah. Jesus. Yeah, well, I'm here for
all. RAF, I mean, come on.
So Weidman and Anderson are, you know, two of the best middleweights who we've seen in the UFC. Like, they're both savage fighters, both legends of the sport, and we see them in this situation again. And maybe this is because, you know, we're in the sport, but, and I know that elite boxers do this as well, Mike Tyson being a prime example with Jake Paul only not so long ago. But do elite MMA fighters go back to this and go back to competition more than elite boxers, do you think? And obviously, as I'm saying this, endless examples are coming to mind here, like, as in even Manny Pacquiao recently, right? Like, it just feels like, I don't know, these Jake Paul promotions,
veteran MMA stars are not coming away looking fantastic. And I feel like this is another situation where they won't. And I don't know. Is this unique to MMA?
Is it aimed, though, like at MMA fans, right? It's got to be, right? Because, yeah. But then it's always like, well, if MMA fans wanted to tune in for boxing, they're going to do it. And why does it have to be two guys who aren't boxers, you know? Like, so you bring the MMA guys, all right, we're going to bring the audience that MMA, and they come over. But what it feels like you're not getting anything wholesome from that transaction. In general,
well,
right?
It also seems like Jake Paul's whole gimmick does not work as well on the boxing world as it has worked on the MMA
that
world.
Is,
you know,
100%.
Like, when we've seen just like the amount of interest he's able to generate when he is trying to do real boxing stuff is pretty minimal compared to when he fights an old MMA fighter who we don't think he deserves to beat, but probably will. And so I think that they're just trying to expand that model a little bit to you know, other fighters who aren't Jake Paul. And it makes sense in a way where you're trying to create a big tent here on Netflix. You want to get, you know, boxing people who want to see how Tank Davis will do against a guy he is far more skilled than, but also far smaller than. You want to get some of those MMA people who might otherwise look at it and be like, I was looking for a reason and not give a shit about what Jake Paul does next. Him fighting Tank Davis is all the reason I need. You sprinkle on a little Anderson Silva, Chris Weidman, and maybe you get those people to say, damn it, I guess I will watch. You know, as far as the question of like why we see MMA fighters have such a hard time giving it up, like there are plenty of examples in boxing too, but I do think money is a big factor in that. It's just because MMA fighters don't typically make that huge amount of money that boxers do. And so it's more likely that they'll get to a spot and be like, I really could actually use that payday. Now, this one, I don't know if it explains that entirely, at least from Anderson Silva's side, because we do happen to know he's getting a pretty hefty payout from the antitrust lawsuit. I believe he's getting the biggest payday from that, right? So
remind us of the number, Ben.
I think it's over $10 million.
Was it?
Yeah. So that's pretty nice. That's pretty nice to just sit home and get that check in the mail.
This dude used to run with an entourage. You had Usher with him, remember, in the day? It's nice to go. He's always been living large.
Yeah, so maybe that one doesn't explain this one, but for a lot of those guys, I mean, especially it explains why they've been so eager to jump up and do basically any boxing match, you know, like that. And that is always the argument with Dana White. It's like, you know, the people think the pay is so different. It's not really. Then why do so many UFC fighters want to do like one-off boxing matches? And you pretty much never hear boxers talk about how they want to come and try it out in the UFC.
And from a psychological standpoint, I remember he was a psychological major, a psych major at Hofstra, I believe. Chris Weidman, like, I think when he left, there was almost like a reluctance to stop competing. You could feel it coming off of him. If you talked to him, you knew that this was just, he was going to give it up. You can understand why he's like, hey, man, somebody wants me to compete and it's my rival and I can make some money at it. You can understand it from his perspective, right? Like, it just makes full sense.
Well, and he was going to do the GFL stuff, right? And then it completely fell apart. So, yeah. And I also think,
all about,
you know,
the GFL.
Yeah. See, isn't it funny how that happens?
They're coming back, guys, next year. Don't worry about it.
It's working. Pizzi,
I beg you, if they reach out to you about investing, check with me first. Don't give them any bank account information until we've had a chance to talk it over.
Too late. Too late.
But I did. You know, I've talked to Weidman a few times about it over the years, and I think that he has a sense that he didn't get all out of his MMA career what he should have. And I absolutely understand how he'd feel that way, because he was definitely unlucky with injuries. His peak was really good, but it did seem like it was going to be longer and it was going to be more than it ended up being. Like, he took that fight with Luke Rockhold, you know, basically made a mistake, couldn't get back into it, and then it just kind of snowballed for him from there, and the injuries became such a factor. I remember Stephen Thompson talking about how, you know, when he would train with Chris Weidman, he's like, he's so good, you wonder, how did this guy ever lose a fight? And I think that there's some part of Chris Weidman that felt like, you know, I didn't squeeze the lemon for all it was worth. And if a chance comes up where I can sort of cash in on the stuff I did at the peak, I want to do it.
Yeah, 100%. That's the exact vibe he gave at the end of his career. So it was not a surprise on that level. I will say that, like, Chris Weidman, and honestly, like, we're talking ourselves into caring about it. But at the same time, you know, I think that it's kind of like they're tied at the hip in history now, because I think if you think of one, you think of the other. And I think this is almost Chris Weidman's way of being like, okay, Anderson, you got another chance at me here, you know? So you know, he's like that. If you talk to him, he kind of thinks like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'm just slightly... I haven't shaken the Vandalay footage of him being across the ring. And I know that didn't necessarily happen in a boxing match, but it was...
It happened in a boxing ring.
Yes, yeah, it did. Dude, I watched that again this morning. How chaotic was that scene? Like, every time I see it, I'm like, my God, what the hell happened here? Like, everybody's swinging at once there.
That I got sent that the day I was going to that NFL game in Dublin. And I just, like I've said it on Ariel's show many times, like, Vandalay was my entry-level drug to MMA. Like, when my brother showed me that guy ripping people apart in Pride as a teenager, I was like, well, this... I am going to have to get me some of this. And seeing him being dragged across, I was genuinely sitting in the bed, like, watching it, and I was just like, I'm not going to be able to shake this.
Yeah. For you know, and when I was in San Diego a few weeks ago, and I went to Chris Lieben's gym, and I was talking to him for that story that I ended up putting up, and he mentioned that as well, where he was just like, it made me so sad to sit and watch that. You know, he fought Vandalay.
He fought Vandalay.
And yeah, and that was even back then, that was still what we were regarding as a diminished version of Vandalay. And he was like, to see him do that, where you're just like, what are you doing? You know, what are you really going to get out of this realistically? You shouldn't even be there. You definitely shouldn't be there when order breaks down and the punches start flying from all directions. But yeah, that one... That maybe is a cautionary tale for us. Like, you might think you've laid everything out in a way where you're not going to get sad, but this sport has a way of surprising you.
True. Is that... Dude,
what?
I was going to ask. I saw this. I think Guilherme shared it on Instagram and I watched it. And I was like, was this done in the lead up to the fight or is this actually happening beyond the fight? You know what I mean? Like, obviously, they must have shot it beforehand because he doesn't have any massive cuts or swelling to his face. But they are sitting there, like, eating Whoppers together in this ad. And you're like, well, it actually speaks to how big the event was, too, right? Like, if you're getting Burger King sponsorships off this, like, this is a pretty mainstream event. And for that then to happen at that event, it's just, fuck, it's so insane, dude. But listen, speaking of people coming out of retirement, we have a bit of a theme going on the show. We did a lot of this last week too, Chuck. Ronda Rousey on The Breakfast Club. What's your man's name? Charmaine the God, whatever his name is.
The God, yeah.
Yeah, he was on there.
Charlemagne.
Is that his name?
Charlemagne. Like the famous irritating European ruler. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He's a very irritating guy. I'll tell you that much. I watch him interviewing people and I'm seething a lot of the time. I'm like, someone, slap him. Let's have a look at this quote from Ronda Rousey. They're like, you look so good because I'm the greatest ever. Of course, this is what happens when I train. I look great. Sorry, I don't have to have a plan for world domination in mind. We have another one, I believe. But Mike Tyson coming back and being the biggest fight of last year just kind of proves that I don't think anyone's really ever done. Ronda Rousey speaking.
You're reading into it, Pizza. You're reading into it.
Yes, yes. I mean, no smoke.
Mike Tyson coming back and doing what, though, is the question I would ask.
Yeah. You know? Again, he was in a boxing ring.
He was in the boxing ring.
And he walked away with a check. So that is also nice, I'm sure. And if that's what we're talking about, then fine. This is something that happens to a lot of fighters, especially I remember talking to Matt Serra about it, where he was like, you know, sometimes I'll be in the gym and I'm training with some of these young guys or I'm hitting mitts or something. And I go, hey, I could still do some stuff. I could still do some damage. And he's like, it's easy to feel that way when you've been away from it for a little while and you are also only experiencing stuff like in the gym hitting mitts, for instance, and not being hit back by somebody who genuinely wants to hurt you for money. And he's like, you can, the longer you've been away, the easier it is to kind of trick yourself into thinking that you could still do it and that you still want to put yourself through those things, that you're still willing to. But he's like, then you have to have a reality check moment with yourself and be like, you left for a reason, and that reason has not gotten any better probably just because you've been away from it for a few years. Now, Ronda Rousey, I'm sure, can look good going out there, hitting mitts. The stuff about, like, I'm the greatest, I assume that's just the pro wrestler and her talking, because we saw pretty conclusively that she is not the greatest. And you know how I know? because she got the crap beaten out of her by the greatest, by Amanda Nunes, who is unquestionably the greatest women's MMA fighter in history. And we are never unquestionable about anything when it comes to naming goats in the sport. But that's the one that everybody agrees on. And so if she wanted to come back, have like a one-off boxing match, make some money, sure, fine. Like the greatest in terms of what the attention that she brought to women's MMA, sure, I give her that too. But let's not act like this is, you could just throw on some boxing gloves, show up, and be an elite boxer for Ronda Rousey. That's not what's happening.
She was on the cover of Ring Magazine back in the day, Ben.
That's right.
Let's not forget that.
Joe Rogan said that she would beat Floyd Mayweather. Yeah. So, Ben, what are you talking about, mate?
I mean, we all got excited, you know?
In retrospect.
We all at times get a little carried away in this sport. So that's fine.
I will say that I am vastly curious as to if she came back in some kind of non-pro wrestling form, like she's going to compete in a legit combat sphere, what the reception would be like. We kind of hit on this recently. I'm not sure. I really am not sure. Have enough of the people who, you know, really had it in for her or left the game or just kind of don't care anymore about it. Like, where is her status at this point? Because, you know, I think she went over to pro wrestling and, you know, if you talk to people within those circles, I don't think she made the kind of splash they thought she would. You know, I don't really think that she was like the superstar that they thought that she might be in that sphere. So if she comes back, if it's MMA, if it's boxing, it's just such a, it's a curious thing because she caught lightning in such a bottle. And she's right when she says, I saw, like, you know, portions of that interview, and I know she was like, you know, my proudest thing is that I kind of busted the doors open for women's MMA, for women to be doing this. That's hard to deny. I mean, in a greatness scale, that is like 100% part of her legacy. That's the biggest part of her legacy. But I'm like, how does that translate, you know, if she does come back? She was such a polarizing figure by just the way she handled everything. But I was a person who was around when she was doing this. So were you guys. Like, but there's so many people within our sphere now. They're newer to the game. I'm not even sure what her reception would be. And if that happened, it would just be fascinating, I think, to see like how people are perceiving her and kind of where that all goes. Like, what is the perception on that? It's just I'm with Ben. The lasting image in my mind is like, well, it was definitive. It's fairly resolute. Like, she got beat very badly by Amanda Nunes to the point where you're like, she's not going to be able to compete at this division, you know, like she's done. That's how it felt. So the intrigue on my level is still there, but I feel like it's going to be completely different from where she left.
Yeah, I mean, the lasting image in a way also is her walking through the airport with a pillow over
her
face.
Oh my God.
You know, like she left the sport pretty bad in that sense, because it was just like, you know, it was very easy when you were on top and you were dominating people. Then you ran into a couple fighters who could hand you a couple losses and she peaced out. And that was like, that's also got to be part of the story. Because, I mean, the contrast is, I remember Miesha Tate getting absolutely smashed by Amanda Nunes at UFC 200 and showing up with a badly broken nose that was actively bleeding under an ice pack. And she still showed up to the press conference and answered questions. And like, you could, that was a resiliency that you could see that it's, but when it turned out, like when things got tough, that Ronda Rousey didn't quite have in MMA. If she were to come back and fight somebody just for a paycheck, just, you know, for fun, it should be somebody who is in a similar position one way or another. Don't have her go to boxing and fight a real boxer, because that'll be sad. No, she'll get absolutely wrecked. Don't have her come back to MMA and fight somebody who is really still actively in this world, because she'll get wrecked there too. The thing that I heard thrown around, right, where I almost hesitate to say it out loud, because as soon as I heard it, I was like, that's disturbingly possible, is her and Gina Carano.
That's the one.
That's the one.
That's the one. Because they were always talking about that. It was always in the back of people's minds.
And you could see them each talking themselves into believing, like, well, I'd beat this version of her.
Right.
You could also see, you know, a promoter, whether it's the UFC or somebody else, looking at it and being like, people would pay for that. And it doesn't really wouldn't have to mean anything. You could still hype it up as if, you know, two MMA women's pioneers.
Yeah,
it could seem like it means some stuff on paper. They could also be at a point where neither one of them is going to absolutely outclass the other one in a way that makes us feel dirty for having watched it. Like you could work with that one. I also, there's some part of me that's just like, it wouldn't be playing to the better angels of our nature.
Would you rather see that or Weidman and Silva? Which, would be honest, if they could plug one of those into that co-main event, which one are you going with?
What, we're doing boxing with Gina Carano?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I mean, I guess I'm still very excited about Weidman and Anderson. what the future holds. Ben, we went to the comments on the post with Ronda Rousey. It was MMA Fighting's post. And we got to tell you, mate, there is some intrigue from the boxing world on Air Jordan. Hit them with the graphic. Do we have... Look at that! Boy. Do you see who those eyeballs?
What? How? No, I don't.
I see something.
Can I tell you who that is with the eyeballs? It's Katie Taylor eyeballs. Katie Taylor with the eyeball emoji underneath this. I saw Mike Tyson do it. Now, just for the record, the likelihood of Katie Taylor A having a phone. And B, taking out the phone.
You think that's Ali? An interview. Is it Ali?
It's Ali.
Yes. He's a menace. Somehow
he's got her sign on. we think it's very unlikely, but however, this is how this goes. And honestly, we were just talking about it with the Jake Paul cards. Can you honestly tell me that someone in Jake Paul's office isn't going, Katie Taylor v. Ronda Rousey?
It'd be it'd be smart for them to investigate that. I mean,
this is sad for us. This is all it takes. This is all it, like that is the minimum level of interest that you could possibly show is to open up the comments, not even type out a comment or anything, just hit the eyeball emoji, send, put it down, and go about your day and let the rest of us work ourselves into a frenzy over it. That's like if a friend of yours came and he's trying to tell you about, like, I think this girl's into me, and you're like, why? And he was like, well, she watched my Instagram story, or like she hit the heart on the thing. I'm in, right? And you'd be like, that is the literal minimum. Focus on yourself. No, King.
I'm an optimist. I would have told him, like, dude, she's into you. Is she favorited that?
She looked at your actual story. Come on, man. It's on. One thing, just to add to this, just to add to layers to this very intriguing possibility. When I went to interview Katie Taylor, when she went pro, she was like, I want to be the Ronda Rousey of boxing. And she's realized that dream. But really, Ben, can she be the Ronda Rousey of boxing without boxing Ronda Rousey? That's my question to you.
I mean, in theory, yeah. Okay, I don't.
I wasn't going anywhere with that question.
I just got to go get smoked a couple times, like by some other boxer, and then go into hiding for a year, and then she's done it. She'll have achieved it, right? At this point.
Oh my God, the disrespect! Oh my God. Before we move on, do you think she's coming back like that? Like in some way to combat sports? I feel like she wouldn't be doing all. I know she has a book out at the moment. She already had a book out, right? Her sister wrote the book.
Yeah, she's had a couple. Yeah, this one's like a graphic novel or something, right? I haven't really. Checked it out, but it was on the show that they were doing.
I feel like she's coming back, right? Or else is this just a trope that, like, the publicists were like, you know what you could say? We get a lot of juices flowing around this book launch. I'm thinking about coming back. Like, I happen to think she's seriously considering it.
I hope it's the second one. Because that would make sense, right? If you were her publicist and you were trying to, like, drum up some interest in a book, wouldn't you be like, at least dangle the possibility out there? Could we get a video hitting some myths or something and throw it out there, get you in the conversation? Look, we're talking about her, so it worked. We even mentioned the book, which none of us knows the name of, but
no,
the book. So it is like more possible. There's a part of me that just feels like if you were coming back for what is the question. Like, and I would hope that at the very least she would be honest with herself about what it was that she was hoping to get out of it, because you're not going to add really anything to the MMA legacy at this point. Like, you might get another paycheck out of it, extend the life of the celebrity a little bit. And if that's good enough for you, then okay, fine. But also, didn't we just hear her talking about the extreme brain trauma that she had suffered?
That's what I was going to point out.
That's
what I'm saying. Like, she's been citing these neurological issues, and that's why she knew her career was done. So I mean, if she comes back, I'd be like, okay, what are we just shoving all that aside for the time being?
Well, and it's not like there's not a history of that too, right? We Vanderlei came back and had that boxing match, and we heard him talking about how he thought that, you know, he was among those in the court filing saying that he thought he was dealing with the brain trauma stuff. Fabricio Werdum was mentioned in that, and then he was going to go fight in the GFL. So that has happened before, but it's also not great. And especially when it was like she presented that brain trauma stuff as here's maybe what contributed to the premature end to my MMA career. And you kind of can't have it both ways there if you want to be like, my brain was so messed up, I had to stop fighting, and I also maybe would have won some of those fights I lost if it wasn't for this brain stuff, and then to show up and be like, I have decided I'm ready for more brain trauma.
Yeah. You know, I will say, if she does, we've seen it. I think what part of her transcendence was when she was as big as she was she was so defiantly competitive, you know, like just about everything. So I feel like, if she's still got that, and I think she does, like even in that interview you're mentioning, Charlemagne, is that his name? She still kind of like presents herself, you know, with that air of defiance, this defiance about her legacy, defiance of who she is, defiance about. And I think that sometimes, like when you hear that, that's why I won't be surprised if she shoves aside everything that we've talked about and says, I'm going to do it again. I wouldn't be surprised for that reason alone. I just think that part of her is still intact.
Yeah. She is not a do nothing bitch, guys. Okay,
no,
that is
no.
the last thing that she's is. Not. Is a do nothing bitch.
Who was it? Was it? Who was it? Beyonce. Beyonce. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, that was God. That was at the height of everything, wasn't it? What hysteria in those days?
What a legend.
Yeah.
Jordan is telling me the book is Expecting the Unexpected.
Always a great idea to have a like a cliche phrase as the title of your book.
Is that Travis in the top left there?
This looks like an old 50s horror film or something.
It's a graphic novel, it seems. Thank you, On Air George,
it seems.
For that. We're going to, again, the lads, we need to get the money in their pockets. You know what I'm saying? What do you want me to do? We've got UFC Vancouver to talk about and your super chats, which I have never forgotten and never will. And we'll see you in 2 minutes, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back, everybody. It is the final segment of the show. We are looking forward to the UFC Vancouver card that is happening this weekend, which I hear is a beautiful place, you know? And my uncle lives there. I've never...
Great city. Place. Absolutely great city.
I'd love to be... Is this where you guys had that drinking session?
Yeah, that's right. We did.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Me and Chuck Mendenhall ran amok in the streets of Vancouver after the Canucks. Night. The Canucks had won one of the Stanley Cup Finals games against the Boston Bruins, and the whole city was celebrating. It did not end well for the Vancouver Canucks, both as a city and a team in that one, because they ended up losing the series and then having riots and, you know, burning cars out in the street and everything. But for that one night, everything was magical and wonderful. It's a wonderful city. It combines how great of a nation Canada is with how great of a region the Pacific Northwest is. And yeah, I highly recommend a trip there for everybody.
Oh my God, I'm really buzzing about it. I will go there at some stage. Ariel's big on it, obviously, being Canadian and whatnot. But they've got a big old fight here. Renier de Ridder against Brendan Allen. It was meant to be Fluffy Hernandez. It is now Brendan Allen, which does take a bit of the intrigue away from it, if I'm being completely honest. Kevin Holland v. Mike Malott. Mike Malott seems to be the guy that a lot of hopes are being pitted on in there over in Canada. And then Marlon Vera v. Ayman Zahabi as well. Jasmine Jazdavicius against Manon Fiorot. A big opportunity for her there. Lads, how is the level of excitement? Chuck, you mentioned that Ben is really close to this event.
Yeah,
Ben,
he should be going. That's a suburb, basically, Missoula, isn't it?
Close by the standards of the Pacific Northwest, I guess. I'll tell you, when I was in grad school and the AWP, the Association of Writing Programs, its conference that it holds every year was in Vancouver one year, and we went. We got a 10-passenger van, and we drove it all in one shot from Missoula to Vancouver, and I don't recommend that. It's a long, long drive. I think it took us 8 to 10 hours up there. So yeah, it was a long and arduous drive, but we had a great time, and I'm sure sullied the reputation of the University of Montana when we were there with our behavior and antics. But you know what? I am always at this point interested to see RDR fight. He is a fun guy to watch. His style is unique enough and interesting enough where you're just like, let's see how this matches up against other styles and against a variety of other opponents. It does lose a lot, though, because it felt like when they announced RDR and Fluffy, I was just like, that is the fight of like the two, you know, guys on the come up in that division. Let's see who's going to be the guy. That was, and also like going to be a really interesting style matchup. This one feels like it only matters if RDR wins. If Brendan Allen goes in there and pulls off the upset, all we've really found out is, okay, well, the hype train has kind of derailed for DeRidder. And otherwise, like, it just feels like, okay, we're hoping that he can do what's available to him to stay on that path. But as far as what it actually means immediately for the division, you lost a lot when Fluffy had to pull out.
Yeah, he's kind of on the reverse end of it now, right? Because he was the derailer of hype trains going in the Bo Nickel fight, and also like obviously with the Whitaker. Not that he was, you know, on some kind of winning streak, but to win those fights, it was like, okay, this guy's for real. We should be paying attention to him in this division. And Fluffy would have been the natural escalation to that, and he would have been in that same role. Now it's kind of reversed because it feels like now he's got something to protect, which is his standing, which kind of came out of nowhere. So it has been a lot of fun, and unfortunately, in the fighting, this is kind of where you end up sometimes, and it's like those are the stakes. They're very esoteric, but if RDR loses, you're like, oh man, now we lose this kind of strange momentum that we didn't know that we wanted that we have right now.
Yeah, it's I really like RDR, and I think I was underwhelmed by him initially in the UFC, but he's blown us out of the water now with the likes of a Nickel fight and things like that. He looks really good. There is interesting things happening for the divisions in these fights. That obviously. I mentioned him a lot. He's not quite there, but Kevin Holland, obviously, always in the mix. It would be a big win for him, but I think Zahabi has a great shot of kind of pushing himself up the rankings here. So does Jazdavicius against Fiero. Fiero, obviously, a contender, former challenger. Jasmine trying to get herself into those situations. One thing I will say, lads, I talked to 39-year-old Davey Grant, who is turning 40 in 2 months. And I have never, I can't remember the last time I spoke to someone that is so happy about being in the UFC, seems so in the moment, you know, like a guy that's just like, he's like, oh, I'm not even considering retiring. I've just relocated my family to Las Vegas, actually. And yeah, this is the greatest thing of all time. I can't believe that I'm doing this for a living. It's absolutely amazing. And I'm just like watching him. He's in the midst of a weight cut. He's absolutely beaming. Like, he's like, my family are so happy in Las Vegas. Crazily, he initially took a long time to convince his wife to move. You know, she runs a business in Durham there in the UK. Took a lot of convincing. Initially, he went to Dubai. He's like, we're going to move to Dubai. Spent 2 weeks in Dubai and was like, you know what? Actually going to go to Vegas now. So completely put the family through a loop. But
wow. Did he need to go to Dubai to so that Vegas would seem like it's not that hot?
Maybe he is of a similar complexion to myself, Ben, so you know he was struggling out there regardless, you know. Absolutely. Yeah. But
you know who else is beaming like that?
Who?
Happy, gets just happy. Guy right over there, that guy Ben Folks, look at him, he's beaming, married now.
He is. It takes us full circle, as you said at the top there too. I mean,
full circle,
he's a different
baby.
Man now that he's married, now he's got that ring on his finger. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. You and Davey Grant, two of the happiest men in MMA, Ben.
Ben and Davey.
I'm trying to keep on an even keel. Let's say that. Yeah. We're not trying to get too high. We're not trying to get too low.
Oh, man. It's crazy seeing a guy like from that era of, like, we were obviously behind you guys in the UK and Ireland, you know, in the early days of the sport. And I was saying to him, like you're from that era, like when you used to show up at an event, not knowing who your opponent was, not knowing what he looked like. And you find out, basically, you get in the scales, you stand beside the scales, and next of all, you're like, right, you're looking around going, I wonder which one it is. No, he's in the UFC. He's excited to get his free gear bag full of stuff. He's fighting Charles Jourdain. He is an underdog, as he always is, but this could make it a 3-fight win streak for him. I will have that. Uncrown's going to have that feature out either today or tomorrow. I only sent it in this morning. Apologies, Mr. Al-Shadi. But very, very much looking forward to that. It is UFC 321 next week, as we've been telling you throughout this show, and we will be back then, and there will be a whole host of shows on Uncrowned. There will be the live watch along, there will be the post fight show, and there will be a lot of build up throughout the week with the Ariel Helwani show, and of course the Boys in the Back and the Crack with these lads. Fingers crossed, hopefully no one's getting married. Chuck, no marriage is coming up, right?
Nah, it's going to be tough for me to do that, but
fuck.
Are you going to this event as well? Are you going to Abu Dhabi? What's happening here?
No. I'm already married. It's just going to be tough.
Fair enough. Not impossible. You know, it could be pulled off.
Where there's a will, there's a way.
Start laying the groundwork today.
You know, Abu Dhabi specializes in that kind of shit.
Make that track then.
On air, Jordan, do we have any super chats?
Nah, you remember.
It's so natural now. You know what I'm saying?
Wait, where's the music? The music is 90% of it.
Bill the legend. He recently retired from the Las Vegas police forces.
Oh, really?
Eric told us last week. Right. An absolute legend. We have a badge here. Shout out, Bill. Can we show the badge? Let's show the badge on air, Jordan.
Look at that.
That's what I flash anytime I get in trouble in Vegas. I'm like, come on, Sean.
I'm sure that helps.
I'm on the force.
Use Bill's name and hope it all works out.
I ran my head into the police car just like John Jones. That's where I learned it.
Wow.
I did nothing wrong. Bill, gigantic thank you to PC, Chuck, Ben, and the team for all you do. Ben, congrats on the wedding. We're loving it, Ben. You're getting all this love.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Bill.
Bill, what a legend. He needs a Las Vegas police badge. We should get him one as well. Anything else there on air, Jordan? Could Ronda Vicady be Matchroom's first MMA fight? Bougie Alpaca.
Sounds like you took a punch to the stomach there, PC.
If I'm Katie Taylor, you got to back up a Brinks truck to my house to get me to do that as an MMA fight, you know? Because it's just the Ronda might still, as Toby Keith would say, she's not as good as she once was. But she might be as good once as she ever was if she can grab you, throw a judo toss on somebody who has never ever seen one before, and then snatch your arm up. You know, like, I think the MMA game has passed that era by. That's not happening anymore for anybody, especially not for her after all these years away and the age and everything. But you might be able to do it to Katie Taylor, which, if you're Katie, the brand would suffer from that. So make sure it's worth the money.
Yeah, you're dead right. It's like when people are talking about Terrence Crawford. Could that be, do they have 100 million? Do they have that? Because that's how much it will cost. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know, man. I think I am interested in this Eddie Hearn potentially to MMA thing. He is a barrel of laughs. Like, I'm not to say that he is this squeaky clean guy. He absolutely isn't. But this thing, Dana White and him, it could bring out the best in old DW, as you were saying last week, Chuck. So I am excited about that. We have one more super chat. Mr. Jordan comes on Sony. My favorite MMA written piece is In Search of Strange Brew. Oh, I wonder who wrote that. What is the written piece each of you are most proud of or your favorite to write?
Oh, man.
Chuck Mendenhall, obviously referencing your fantastic piece. So you start with you, Chuck. It is.
That one was pretty fun. So, I mean,
Doesn't that one have to stand out for you just because of how hard it was to find it? Always a feeling of like success when you're like, there are so many challenges in the way of getting and a story, it was one of those and you get it done anyway.
Yeah. It was one of those ones where you're like, you're trying it and people are sort of like, why do you care about that dude? You know? Mm-hmm. But you're like, well, I know there's a story to it. You know, there's some story to it. And it took 18 months, 2 years to track him down and all this stuff. So I guess that one would stand out. But in terms of in a similar way, like a very challenging one was the one I did on Douglas Crosby, which was called, I did this long form piece on Douglas Crosby. And it was super tough because he put you through all these strange things. Like, you know, he would talk to my assistant. You're never sure who you're texting with. And it was like just this process. But then to incorporate his weirdness and all his quirks and tie that into like him being an arbiter in our sport, like a guy who is like a judge, and like you gotta like think about all this and trying to get to the bottom of his philosophies, you know, when it comes to like judging, and to put that all into a piece that made sense. It was like, that was a real challenge, but I was always happy with the way that one came out.
Ben?
You know, I mean, I got a few where I was pleased with my ability to push through and do the story. You know, the series I did on the Grudge Gym in Denver over the years.
The Hurt Locker? The
Hurt Business. Yeah. You know, that one stands out for me. It's weird. Whenever I go back and read an old story I did, and Chuck, I'm sure this happens to you sometimes too, where sometimes I'm Googling for information that I know is out there that I want to put in another story, and I'll find the link to the story will come up, and then when I click on it, only then do I realize, oh, I wrote this.
Right.
I wrote this like 10 years ago or 15 years ago, and I don't really remember. And it's the same thing when I go back and look at like some of the stories that I was proud of. If I go read them right now, the thing that will stand out to me is things that sentence level stuff that I would change if I were to, like, mm-hmm. I want to be able to go edit it right now and you can't. And so I kind of have to stop myself from even doing it because all that will stand out to me is just the ways that I wouldn't,
true.
That I don't like the things that kind of bug me about it now. But I also, I wrote one covering a high school kid who was going off to fight in a pro MMA fight here in Montana. And that one was an honorable mention for the best American sports writing that year.
That's right.
So I was pretty pleased with that one.
Nice. Nice. Well, they are two fantastic writers. There's absolutely no doubt about that. And it is a pleasure for me to host this wonderful show with them. And as I said, we hope to be back here next Friday with these beautiful, beautiful men and with all you beautiful crackheads in the comments, giving us that love, hitting us with super chats so I actually can introduce the topic. You know what I mean? Like, that's what it was. Sometimes I didn't see them. It wasn't me not being good at my job. Far from it. Okay? Anyway, that is the end of our show. Have a wonderful weekend. Enjoy UFC Vancouver. And it's the big one next week, baby. It's Tom Aspinall v. Cyril Gane. And I will make you love that fight. I probably will make you love that fight before it happens. On Air Jordan, you're the man. Oscar Losev, you're also the man. We love you all. See you next week. Mwah.